my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Whiskey Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm joined by my host, Ray Dieter, tonight. It's October 12th. We've got a very special show ahead of us, the Oktoberfest show. We've got some women in beer and a special friend from England, Samuel Smith, VII, the 7th. Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. It's the culmination of information from passionate beer wholesalers who serve over 50,000 beer retailers in 14 states. This is where the beer industry meets the larger beer community. Check out GreatBrewers.com, and we're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 27 New York City bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. GoodBeerSeal.com. Ray, how are you tonight?
I'm all right, Jimmy. How are you doing, man? I know that nobody really cares about the personal life of a bar owner, but you know, outside of that, I'm doing fine.
Well, we may have some questions about your personal life tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we've got some call-ins and some email questions, and we'll get to those a little later.
Okay.
But there's a little controversy around the show tonight. Originally, we were booking the show as Women in Beer, and it turns out that some women didn't think that that was an appropriate subject. But on the other hand, we actually have some women who are very proud to be women in beer. And our special guest tonight is Sonia Giacobbe, who's a partner in Kelso Brewing. And we have B.R. Roya, who is the New York area rep for Shelton Brothers Importers. And we have Audrey St. Leger, who represents French craft beer in America. So we've got some interesting guests here. Ray, what do you think about women in beer and that theme? It seemed to be controversial.
I'm for women in beer. I mean, not just like in the brew kettle, but like in the business. And it's a moot point. I mean, it's like it's a business like any other business, and anybody can execute it. But I think that beer tends to be like a man's world, and that's just ridiculous, because I know so many women that enjoy beer, and it's crazy to think that beer has to be all about men and watching football and wrestling and all that kind of stuff. It's and all oiled up and
well, let's get Sonia on. Sonia, you're usually outspoken, and
yeah, I've already had a few thoughts about that. Yeah, if beer is football and Coors Light, and then it can stay a man's world. But I think the
Great point.
Yeah, I think, but the craft brew industry, like all small local industries, anybody who's passionate about it gets into it, and that's not limited by gender by any means. I understand why some people tend to be like, "Wow, you don't need to segment us as just women in beer," but you know, that's fine. I don't mind being highlighted in some way and having my contributions heralded. That's fine. I like that.
So you've got a great thing going with your husband, Kelly Taylor, mm-hmm. at Kelso. Mm-hmm. Tell us how you got started and your role in the brewery.
Okay. Well, Kelly and I actually met working at the same brew pub out in Seattle. And it was like beer geek love from sort of moment one. It's kind of embarrassing, actually. No, literally, one night we were out tasting beers, and he was like, "Oh, that's got a lot of black malt in it." And I was like, tasted it. I'm like, "Oh, no, that's roasted barley." You know, ha, ha, ha. That was love at first sight from there. And fast forward like 10 years. Yeah, really beer geeky stuff. But fast forward 10 years later, and we're in New York City, and the craft brewer scene is burgeoning, but it's still on the smaller side. But we're feeling really optimistic. You can see it starting to build. And we're looking around, and we're like, you know, there's a lot of really great, crazy craft beers, but there's not a lot that opens the door to people who sort of want to get to enjoy a local, well-crafted beer that's just highlights just the simple beauty of beer. That's not
a conversation we have here a lot about all the extreme beers that are right there. I mean, they're great.
They're great. I love them. Yeah.
But some of these, you know, an exquisite Pilsner, an exquisitely made pale ale is just remarkable.
remarkable. And what happened? Okay.
We lost you, Ray, but you're back.
All right. Anyway, so I agree. And a lot of the beers that you guys make are subtle and really, really well made.
Yeah, and part of that is you can, and no offense to you guys, because I know that you're importing, but I feel like that's, when you're doing something like Pilsner, the more local it is, the better it is, the more likely you are to get those nuances, because beer is really sensitive. It ages really quickly.
And that's always been a big thing for me in selecting the beers for DBA, is the difference, you know, the local beer versus the imported beer, the classic beers that everybody's grown up reading about, all the beer geeks at least, you know, the Pilsner Urquells, the Samuel Smiths. I can't believe we have Samuel Smith
know,
on the show.
I kind of feel a little chagrined saying that. I'm like, oh, but the winter welcome.
There's a place for both. There really is a place for both.
I mean, I agree.
We all got Michael Jackson's book and we looked at all these amazing beers from Europe and dreamed of them. And now, and back when I first opened up DBA, those things were not available.
Right.
And now they are.
Well, but you know, when you say that there's room for both, that's exactly the point, and that's what Kelly and I were looking at, was like there was a very small market and there was a whole segment that wasn't getting what they wanted. And you know, and I've always been a big proponent, drink what you like. You know, I don't care if somebody tells you that Duvel is the greatest thing since sliced bread. You know, if you don't like it, you don't like it. Don't drink it.
You can talk to Dan Shelton about that if you want to one of these days.
Okay.
He's got some opinions about the Duvel beer.
Not the green. No.
And we also have one of our more regular guests, B.R. Roya from Shelton Brothers. Welcome to the show, B.R.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Segue.
What do you think about our theme tonight?
I think it's great. I mean, I feel that this is one of these like very male-dominated industries, as Sonia was saying, where, you know, you think of like, yeah, it's football, it's the Coors Light girls dressed up in bikinis going around.
I hate that.
And I've been doing, in terms of both homebrewing, judging beer, and now working with beer, been doing this for at least 10 years. And I'm often not taken seriously, simply because the fact that I'm a woman. And then I start talking about beer and people realize, oh, I shouldn't be talking to the guy next to you who knows nothing about beer, but to you, because you're the one who actually knows about your products, knows about the beer, knows about judging.
Well,
so I think
you're
you're
one of our top guests.
But I like
I mean,
to.
I feel like you can fill a niche for almost any subject about beer. That's why you're on tonight.
Call me the beer nerd.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that, though. A lot of times people will be like, you know, push me to the side to get to Kelly. And I'm like, no, I do actually. All right, that's cool. Talk to Kelly. That's fine. I'm going to drink your beer in the meantime.
And let's ask Audrey. We have Audrey St. Leger, who represents French craft beer in America. Audrey, we know you as someone who represents Jen Lane and Colomba and Pietra.
Yes.
How did you ever get involved in more specifically in French beer, you know, and being a woman? I mean, you have a very unique job, don't you?
I think there is nobody else doing the French beer. I don't think there is any other salespeople saying the French beer anyway on the U.S. market. But the thing is, for me, it's a little bit different. I really wanted to sell something from my region and a brewery that I really like and something that I've been drinking a lot with all my family. And when I applied for the job, I think a lot of guys thought that they were getting the job before me, and the brewery really wanted somebody who was from the village and knew the beer, and I think that's how I got the job.
Well, you grew up very close to the Jen Lane Brewery, right?
Yeah, it's just like 5 minutes driving from the brewery, and I went to the school with the kids, and I was out of France for like 10 years before I came back to the brewery, and I was like, I want to work with you. I really want to promote your product in US. And so that was, for them, that was very like, yeah, of course, I mean, you're from here, and so you should do it.
Local girl selling the local beer.
Yes.
In America.
And it's easier for me. I mean, I know the people. I really know from the person who does the logistics to the person who make the beer. I can talk to them every day. And so it's really easier, I think.
Do you have a hard time selling French beer to places that aren't French restaurants or French-oriented?
Yeah, it's not easy. French people know that we have French beer. They don't always know that we have it in US. It's very strange because sometimes they really want to do it and they want to promote their product, and sometimes because they live in US, they don't really care. But I think the French product that we have can really make a French restaurant much more French than it is now. And that's what I'm trying to do with
it. I mean, we always associate wine with the French, obviously.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to say about the beer and the woman. It's, for me, it's more a woman we think about beer like very bitter or very easy to drink or disgusting. That's usually the adjective that you have when you talk to a girl or about beer. And when you say, no, look, I have a very malty beer with caramel flavor. I have a wheat beer with spices, I have a blonde beer with honey flavor, and it's just the malt. And they're very surprised about that. And when they discover that the beer can be like wine, talking about
and
style,
paired with the food.
And paired with the food, right. Then they really start and they really want
well, to. Well, I got to say, the Columba from Pietra is one of my favorite beers.
We have it.
We have some right here. Yes. We should open it.
Let's open that, and BR, you brought a couple other beers. You're doing a tasting tonight at Jimmy's number 43.
Yeah, we've got six of our German beers at Jimmy's tonight, two of which are from Gravity Kegs from Franconia in northern Bavaria. We just were drinking one of them, the Ahornberger Landbier.
Beautiful sound.
It's a Dunkel. It's an unfiltered, unpasteurized lager, dark lager. And then we've also got the Weissenau Monksfest, which is an Oktoberfest Märzen style. And those both are going to be Gravity Kegs tonight at Jimmy's. And then I also brought that Kapuziner Weiss, wheat beer, the Monkschaft Schwarz, which is a black lager.
That's delicious.
That is very. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that one.
And
that
EKU 28, just for something a little strong.
Just to make sure we all sleep well.
Yeah.
So how does the Shelton Brothers, how do they ever come up with all the beers they have? I mean, they've got beers from all around the world right now.
Yeah, at first it was simply going around to breweries that were either recommended or in the Michael Jackson, and Dan would meet with them and tell them, yes, we'd like to bring them in. Now we get a lot more of recommendations, word of mouth, where people say, oh, you should now, you should approach the Shelton Brothers. They, they're doing my beer. They might be interested in your beer. But we're always looking for something new. I mean, basically trying to find something like the best breweries from countries, whether it's representing a new style or something extremely traditional, whether it's, a straightforward German Pilsner or a British Bitter or a British IPA, to things like, we've got the Scandinavians who are really taking it in a different direction. So it's all across the map. But basically it boils down to good beer.
It's so hard to keep track of all these new things that are being brought into the country.
Oh, yes.
Especially the Scandinavian things. I mean, especially for me, because I have a really short attention span. And even shorter than Jimmy's, really, when it comes down to it. But, I mean, the Michler and all these crazy things that are coming in. And there's things that are... A lot of times it's almost like a regurgitated American style beer that's being brought in, but kind of reinterpreted.
Well, they've been inspired by both homebrewing and American microbrews,
right.
And they've now there was a tradition of brewing in Scandinavia, which unfortunately mostly got lost to the light, bland, light lagers. So now they're just trying to. Some of them, like the Hanbrigerite from Norway, are doing more traditional beers, but then others like Mikkeller and Shuttlet and Yugnyu are doing more sort of American-inspired, but also the consumers there aren't familiar with these styles at all. To them, it's completely opens up a brand new world for them.
I think that's an interesting topic. Maybe do a whole show about that, about how the blowback from...
Your mic again.
Raise
right.
mic.
Yeah.
But,
Hello, testing.
All right, welcome back, Ray.
Back on the air. I think it's an amazing topic. The traditional European style beers from Belgium, from England, how they're kind of influenced by the American brewing that just for the past 20-25 years.
Well, it goes back and forth, doesn't it? I mean, like,
and it should.
Like Sierra Pale Ale was influenced by the English beers at one point, and now
right.
it's the trend might be flowing the other direction. Interesting, one of the beers that we brought today is our mild, the Satisfaction, that's based on an English bitter.
Oh, I'm familiar with that beverage.
This is the Kelso Mild.
Yeah, the Kelso Mild. It's called a Satisfaction. And it's based on an English bitter. Oh, yes,
can I
right?
have some, please?
Let's let Sam Smith the Seventh, did he get to try some? Just for our listeners, too, Shelton Brothers at sheltonbrothers.com. You really should go on and look through all the beers they have, because it changes all the time. They really update their website, and they have a full list of the beers available. And then we have Kelso, which is our local brewery, and always making good stuff.
I forgot to pour myself one.
Oh, this is very good.
I'm glad you like.
Yeah, I do like it. I've had it before, and I like it.
Which Sam Smith beer would you compare this to?
None.
Nothing.
None.
It's just an interpretation of a bitter. It's not you know, a strict bitter. So I mean, that's what we were just talking about, right? We're doing interpretations, new changing. I mean, it's like being a chef, right? Brewing. It's the same ingredients, but everyone's putting their own little spin on it. This was another one of the markets that we really felt like was, when we set out, was there were all these high alcohol beers. We're like, God, I just want to drink like 6 beers and watch the Saints game or something. That was a nod to you, Ray. Yes.
Thank you very much, Sonia.
and you can't if your beer is 8%, right? And so all of our beers tend to be about 4.5 to 5.5. This one's 3.5.
I made that mistake on Sunday. I was drinking a 10% beer that I didn't realize how strong it was.
Right.
Yeah, it was ugly.
It's ugly, yeah. But this is...
Which beer was that, right?
It was the Imperial Pumpkin Ale from River Horse out in New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
Really good beer. Really super... It's my favorite pumpkin beer this year. And
let me give a shout out too. Here at Roberta's, which is where we record, they have on Ballast Point Oktoberfest.
I haven't tried that yet.
It's pretty awesome. I mean, it's so dark. It's really not quite an Oktoberfest, but Ballast Point is from California. But I'm giving them the shout out because they came to our recent New York City Brewers Choice event, and Colby Chandler came on. He did a great job. We're going to take a little break right now. Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes with Sam Smith VII from England.
Bones might take and the skin might sag, and still she's got the strength to have a Harry Rag. Harry Rag, Harry Rag, do anything just to get a Harry Rag. And she curses herself for the life she's led, and rolls herself a Harry Rag and puts herself to bed.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We got a lot of guests in here tonight. I'm here with Ray Dieter from DBA and Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. We've got a really special guest, Joe Lipa. He's one of the main guys at Merchant Devin, which is an awesome distributor and importer based in Seattle, right, Joe?
True.
Yep. Yeah, and tell us a little more about your company and what you do and the special guest you brought tonight.
I brought a special one. Merchant Devin was the first company to bring specialty beer to the United States. We were in 1978. I actually sold the first case of Samuel Smith in the East Coast as a distributor, and I've been selling the beer forever.
And what year was that?
What we did was we went into the styles of beer business. We're the first company to actually figure out there was life after yellow lager. And what we did is once we identified the style, we then went to the country of origin that produced that style at its highest level. For instance, you wouldn't go looking for wheat beers at Sam Smith, nor would you be looking for porters or stouts in Hyinger. And once we found this, we identified the styles, we then went to the producers of these products, these breweries, that not just sold at this level. These were the folklore breweries. Our youngest brewery is Samuel Smith at 1758. We got a brewery called Orval at 1012. So you can see there's a lot of history. The breweries, there's 10 of them, and they're all family-owned and operated. They're generational, and we're going to see this here from the seventh generation here, who's about to do this very shortly for Sam Smith. And in the monastic breweries, and the breweries are Samuel Smith, Eyinger, Lindemans, Traquair House, the Pincus Brewery, Rochefort, Orval, and Westmalle.
It's a powerhouse brand.
So, Joe, when did you start importing? What year was that?
1978. And I remember coming into New York City. We were talking about New York City beer and women. I used to come into the city and we had no money, no beer, no sand. Matter of fact, this brochure I gave you, Jimmy, I designed it in 1981 because we had nothing. I just went up and down Manhattan, brought my car in, many parking tickets and tow trucks, and just went up and down the street trying to find one customer. And I found Sam at Waterfront Ale House, Muggs Ale House. I can name them all, and they built us. And I just went to them and said, guys, you got this thing exclusive. We couldn't sell it to anybody else anyway. I need a distributor, you know. And so, but what the and picture this: we came to the United States. The most expensive beer in the United States was Heineken at $12 a case. There was a little trickling of Anchor Steam, a great beer from Fritz Maytag, no longer. He just sold it. But
right. Hey, Joe, I got a question for you. Merchant de Vin, isn't that like the sellers of wine?
Well, we first got into business. We went to France. We were looking for wines. And when you go into the pubs, what do you find when you go into the pubs at night? You find great beer. So the wine business went down very fast. Our backgrounds were wine. So we kept it because we were trying to say, and this is really how reflective you can think of things. In 1978, we said, you know what? Beer, these are styles of beer, styles of wine. Merchant de Vin is not a beer company. We're selling beer like wine. And today, beer is the new wine. It is the new wine in this country. People are gravitating to it. It's magnificent. We have a big American craft beer movement, which for us, we love it because what they're doing is they're breaking down palates very fast. The local people, you go to a local pub. I just said this in a training seminar. I said, when I was a kid, when I was 18 years old, I would go, when I went to college, and I lived from Massachusetts, you find a local senior, and you try to give him some money, and I used to drink quarts of Utica Club for 25 cents. That's how
Yum.
I got my buzz.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I turned 21, you go to the local bar. This is the best beer bar you could go to. You walked in the bar had four taps. You ask him what he had. In my world, it was Schaefer, Schlitz, Rheingold, and Ballantine. Ballantine is the first time I ever tasted anything with a hop.
Original IPA. Their IPA was not bad.
It was very good.
And I also like the rebuses on the bottle caps.
But then you say, well, I don't really like that draft list. What do you got for bottles? The same four beers. So you never could develop
a palate. Yeah, we got
everything. Now, fast forward the young adult. That's who's pulling this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Now you come in. And the adult does the same thing. In this world, they're 18 years old. They go find a local senior. Now it's Coors Light 12-pack or 30-pack, you know, until they turn 21. And then what they do, they show up at DBA when they're 21, or your place.
And 21, yes.
At 21, and they look and they see 50 taps, and they see these bottled beers, and they could start at Sam Adams or the local brewery here, and their palates are gone. Once they go, they're gone. And then they search, and they're on the webs. And then we're the beneficiary of this craft beer movement where they're on the webs, as you know, it's all through internet now. And then they'll say, hey, Sam Smith's Oatmeal Stout is world class. And people say, well, I drank the local Oatmeal Stout. What are the ones out there? And when you do it, you say, there's the one that resonates.
Isn't that great that at this day and age we can say, I drank the local Oatmeal Stout?
Absolutely.
I mean, not long ago, that would not be said anywhere in New York City. The local oatmeal stout.
Quite honestly, from Merchant of Innsbruck, I get depressed. I don't want to Google how many oatmeal stouts are made by American
brewers. And Joe, I just got to say, it's great to see you here in New York City, because I think I've spent more time with you in other places in Europe and beer festivals outside of New York City. It's good to see you in town.
Well, we love it. So what happened last night was really interesting. We're in town because we have brought to the United States young Samuel Smith, who is the seventh generation of the Samuel Smith
V-I-I.
Brewery. Which this is the brewery that literally, no disrespect to any American craft brewery, they all should just get down and bow, because this is the one that really created it for everybody, is the Samuel Smith Brewery. And we brought those beers in. I was mentioning this $12 case Heineken. We brought Samuel Smith in at $32 a case, and there was not a beer between 12 and 32. Try to go sell that. And what the difference was in the bottle. And they were easy drinking beers.
Well, you know what, Joe? Actually, always Samuel Smith has always been a good buy. For what it is, you know, it's not too expensive.
It's world class. We try to keep it with value because What they make is they make beer by the strict definition of the style of the beer. You want to taste an IPA, the original IPA, it's Samuel Smith's IPA. No disrespect to 800 IBUs and 900 IBUs, but those maybe shouldn't be called IPAs. I don't know. That's
well,
for
that's
someone
a whole
else to talk about. Exactly.
We could have, yeah.
Exactly. But
and I'd be on your side on that one.
Yeah, yeah. And so what Smith has done is become the icon because they produce it at such a high quality that it becomes the icon. People say, "Oh, I love Sam." We're talking about women and beer. Your waitress, your server, your bartender. I'm sorry.
DBA.
At DBA, no.
Joe, you know what? Let's do this. Let's slow down. Let's bring on the young scion of the Sam Smith Brewery, Samuel Smith VII, the seventh himself.
He's ready to take it over.
Let's have
a
him
few
say
years.
A few for things it, about. Tell us about your education in the world of beer, and you know, what tell us about beer and the life as a
about
young
growing
man
up in beer.
Yeah, well, just speaking personally, I mean, I'm 21 years of age now. My family, we've owned a we've had the brewery. The brewery's been going since 1758, and I'm going to be the seventh generation to work in that family business. And my dad and my uncle currently run the business. My dad's been running it for 45 years. Before then, my grandfather ran it for 45 years or 50, whatever it was, and, you know, forever and ever. So for me, I've just grown up with it. You know, I just no escape, really. I love the beer business. I think it's a great.
So you want to do this? It's
great
like
thing to be involved.
You want to do it?
Well, no compulsion. You know, we've always said that, no compulsion. But, you know, for me, there's no greater thing that I want to be involved in the rest of my life. So
there's no gun at your head.
No, what, sorry?
There's no gun at your head.
No, fortunately, there's never been any guns anywhere near my head. I'm currently at school. I haven't actually joined the business yet. I'm at Oxford University. And next year, I'm going off to do an internship at the Radeberger Brewery in Frankfurt in Germany. Very successful German brewery.
Very different than what your family.
Very
does.
Different. Very different. I mean, we like Joe was saying, English beer is English beer, and we're very proud of what we do in England. German beer is German beer. They're very proud of what they do in Germany, and so it'll be great to go over there and see how they do things. Very successful operation.
You'll see a lot of clipboards and lab coats.
Yeah, I probably will do. Yeah, they're very keen on their quality, and you know, as I think we all should be, really. I mean, quality is what built the sort of Sam Smith sort of brand in the first place. But sort of absolute attention to detail and quality. And there might be people out there who are thinking, you know, why don't Sam Smith sell any draft beer in the US? And you know, it might be a good thing to do, but the simple reason from our point of view is we are just so concerned about quality. That's what built our brand. That's why we are the number one English imported beer in terms of speciality beer, is because of that attention to quality. And we just feel that keg beer, you might somehow compromise it. So for me, it's a great privilege to be involved, to be in this business, and to be able to take on the family business. A
couple questions that we have for you. First of all, what is it like growing up in the beer business? When did you first go in the brewery, and when did you first work in the brewery?
Well, I don't know. I've been going into the brewery all my life, really, just going around, having a look at the place, meeting the people who work there, some great characters who work there. And but, you know, it's not... I would say I had a fairly normal upbringing, you know, sort of going down to the brewery a little bit, but, you know, just a sort of normal sort of upbringing for a guy in England.
Do they ever throw you in and have you stir some mash and say it's Sam's the seventh batch or something like that?
No, fortunately not. No, fortunately not. I mean, that reminds me. I mean, I'm glad I'm not. I've no desire to become a cooper. We employ a cooper at the brewery who makes all our wooden casks. We're the only brewery in the whole world that uses wooden casks for all our cask beer heritage. We're very, very proud to be able to continue. And yeah, I mean, our cooper, when he's done his apprenticeship, when he graduates from his apprenticeship, he gets put into one of his wooden casks that he's made. The cask gets filled up with beer, gets shut up, and he gets rolled all the way around the brewery and then back to the cooper's shop and let back out. And when he's done that, he's graduated as a Sam Smith cooper. But fortunately, that sort of thing has never happened to me.
Tell him how beer is delivered in Tadcaster.
Yeah, I mean that the... That the wooden cask, like I say, we're the only brewery in the world who has all our cask beer on wooden casks, and
How you delivering it?
And that's one of many many sort of extraordinary things that we do. I mean, we are unique as a brewery around the world. We've got an amazing heritage, been going for 250 years, and we're very proud to continue that. So another example of that is the fact that we are the only brewery in the world who has a team of Shire horses. So they're enormous, great, big, powerful horses.
I can confirm and, that. I've seen them.
Exactly. They're amazing things, aren't they? And they go out in the town of Tadcaster, which is the small town where our brewery is, and they go and deliver beer every day to 5 days a week to the pubs. And it's really an amazing sight in Tadcaster, going around hearing the clip, clop, clop of our horses going and delivering beer 5 days a week, only brewery in the world. And, you know, there are other things. We have got our Yorkshire Squares, the only brewery in the world who brews all their ales with Yorkshire Squares. These are open-top stone fermenters. You know, there used to be hundreds of breweries, probably many, many breweries out there who used them. We're the only one who continues it. We're very proud of that. Of that heritage, but no one else sadly has sort of appreciates it. But we think it's very important. That it really
oh,
gives
wait a
the beer.
Second. I got to interrupt. I mean, people appreciate.
Oh yeah, sorry, well yeah, no exactly. Totally no, what I no sorry, what I meant was other brewers haven't appreciated it over the years.
But, we would do it, but a Brooklyn Air. You know,
well, Nave. Well,
Brooklyn
you say
Squares.
That's an interesting point you raise. That actually, I mean, because the thing is that these Yorkshire Squares, I mean, it doesn't. You can use them wherever you want. Actually, I mean, to be honest, we burn coal at our brewery. About the only brewery that does that as well. And you know, you think that might contaminate it. But
is it English coal?
English coal, absolutely. It comes from about 20 miles away, and
it's probably a nice minerality.
But the amazing thing about these Yorkshire Squares is even though they're so old and sort of, you know, some would say antiquated form of brewing, they're actually incredibly, you know, good at keeping quality because they have this layer of yeast on the top which actually stops any beer, any contamination to that yeast or that brew. And so
it's got a layer of yeast where, I'm sorry?
On top of that fermenting beer, protecting it from the air and any unfavorable yeast that might be wild yeast that might be in the air and contaminating
the ambient yeasts.
Exactly. Yeah, right. So the amazing thing is that even though we are incredibly old fashioned and hang on to these extraordinary methods of brewing that we think really makes our beer special, it's actually very, very, you know, a lot of focus on quality control,
so you're
and
still
purity
using
of the beer.
Proper top fermenting yeasts.
Yeah, that's right.
So I know
a lot of
ale breweries, like Fuller's, for example, they've developed a yeast that ferments at the bottom, even though they still call
it's
it
very
ale.
Interesting. Yeah, no, well, our yeast is, I think, the oldest unchanged strain of yeast in the UK. I might be the whole world. I'm not actually sure that we've used that strain of yeast for 100 years. You know, it's a great strain of yeast brewed in exactly the traditional way, top fermenting in these slate Yorkshire Squares, the only brewery in the world to do that. So, and the other thing about it is it's not just a sort of a gimmick, a sort of nice sort of thing to keep going for the sake of it. I think many people would agree that our beers have got a real sort of well-rounded, full-bodied character, which again is pretty unique, and that's what comes from brewing in these stone Yorkshire Squares.
All right. What's very unique about Samuel Smith is, you know, in this world there's few things that are certain, and the only thing I know in my world that is certain is life, death, and Samuel Smith will be the last man standing of an independent brewer in England, and it is in fact true. They will spend more money going back to 1758 than they're going to 2008. It is truly remarkable. If anyone that's listening ever gets a chance to go up to Tadcaster, you will see something that you'll never see in a brewery.
Joe, one quick question. So for you, having been in this business a long time, longer than young Samuel Smith and longer than myself, would you consider that Sam Smith has a great tradition in terms of like being traditional brewing?
It's all traditional.
All brewing. Traditional.
There's no out of the box.
But do you think that makes a difference?
It does, because the consumer, once again, they do not. We did the Stingo. This is the first time we got out of the box in a long time.
Oh,
we did
yeah. I forgot about that.
And you know, Ray, we had 900 cases produced for the United States. What we did it for really was, you know, Samuel Smith. People say, "Well, I've been there and I drank it when it was my." We were in a store the other day, and some guy said, "That was my first beer." And I said, "Well, when'd you drink it again?" You know, because there's so many opportunities to drink a lot of beer now, and people do that. You know, but they all come back to it. And so we brought Stingo out because, as you know, the American craft brewers have done a tremendous job with extreme beers. And it's to do a lot of things, to show quality, to show sound bites, to get a lot of things going. So we said, let's have a little fun with this thing. And so we did it. And we sold that beer, $12, $13 a bottle. It was gone in 30 days, every bottle. They can do it, and they can do it. And we're looking at other projects that we'll do to show them that they're not only a traditional brewer. Stingo, by the way, was a brewery style that has been out of existence for a million years, just like oatmeal style. Merchant of Inn.
It's called Stingo.
Stingo.
The question I have, Joe, yeah. and Sam, is when are we going to get some casks of Smith's here in New York City?
That's one of those life death and probably never because of the quality issue too.
That's right. I mean, all our cask beer, like I say, we're the only brewery in the world. We have wooden oak casks. So we employ Cooper.
When are we going to get some casks?
That's the reason. I mean, these casks, we sell them in England. You can't ship these things across the Atlantic Ocean.
How about if we provide the casks?
Even if we do provide the casks.
When I say we, I mean by America.
Well,
and by America, I mean Union. Union beer.
Cask beer done the traditional way, as we do it, has a shelf life of probably about a week after it after it's brewed.
Yeah, but we have some casks coming over here. I know the Shelton Brothers bring some casks, and I know that the United, another importer, brings some casks.
I mean, that's fantastic.
They're fine.
I'm really glad that you appreciate, you know, that's great for you that you have the English cask beer. But, I mean, that's... I mean, to be brutally honest, the way that we do things at Sam Smith's is that we are very, very traditional, and that's what we believe our success is based on, is sticking to what we do best.
But if IPA was made to be sent to India, and that's before airplanes and big steamships, I mean, if you really want to be traditional, you can, like, you know, we can get a donkey cart to come around south of Africa or whatever on a tramp steamer and bring it over. But I think it's time for Samuel Smith's to be available in cask occasionally for special events in New York, not in America.
Go, Sonia, take it.
I was going to say, I don't know. He's making me want to go to Tadcaster. I want to see the horses. And I mean,
it's beautiful. It's
and
really
you
fun.
Know, and I appreciate it. He's saying go local. The same, you know, I mean, he's...
I think that kiss it. We're going to take a short break. I think Kelso should get some horses, do some traditional casts and parade them around. We'll be back
some
in a few
Brooklyn
minutes.
Horses.
Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're having a lively show here today. We've got Women in Beer, and we've got Sonia Giacobbe, who I've been dying to have on the show for a long time, from Kelso.
Hello.
We got Samuel Smith VII. We got Joe Lieper from Merchant of Inn, and BR, and Audrey. Everybody, this is a great show. So we had a little bit of lively conversation as we took a break. We'll give a shout out to greatbrewers.com, our sponsor, and a goodbeerseal.com, our supporter. And we had a question, a write-in question from one of our listeners. The question is for Ray. It said, Ray, you're a big fan of English cask ale, and you're employing Alex Hall to develop that program. But do you ever serve the German Franconia gravity cask ales? And how do you compare them to English cask ales?
BR, did you ask that question?
I did not ask that.
it was Tom from Brooklyn.
Tom from Brooklyn. Hi, Tom. How you doing? Thanks for the question. And I have done the Franconian gravity casks, and I will do them again. I think it's great. And what's the difference? That's a really interesting question, because a couple of years ago I was in Bamberg, Germany, and I was with Dan Shelton, and we were going to a number of local breweries around Bamberg, and we had what's called Keller beer. And I never knew what a Keller beer was. I read about it in Michael Jackson's books and other beer books. But I actually had a Keller beer, which is basically real ale, but a lager. It's aged and delicious, and the yeast is still in it. It's unfined. It was fantastic. So, I mean, there's the tradition with a lot of these Franconian casks isn't that far abreast from, or far afield from, the English real ale, except that one's an ale and one's a lager, and that distance is being shrunken too between ales and lagers. Like, we're talking about the yeast that Fuller's uses. It's a bottom fermenting ale yeast.
Well, the BR is the importer of, this is the Weisenhoher Monksfest,
right?
And tell us a little bit more about the Franconian cask that you guys bring over. And tell us what we're drinking. I love this beer. It's great.
Yeah, this one is the Weisenhoher Monksfest. It's their Oktoberfest Märzen. A little bit malty. This one, I mean, and this is the problem you get with some of the casks or gravity kegs. This one is unfortunately lost some of its maltiness. I had another from the very same batch that came over, just much different. This body is already starting to get a little thin, unfortunately. I shouldn't say this about my own beers, but I mean, I want to tell the truth that this one, I've had this in much better condition. But that's the problem you have when you bring these over, and you don't know always how exactly they've been handled. All these came from Union today, so I know that they've been refrigerated.
So
these come in, they come in 20-liter casks, or kegs, little plastic kegs, and you tap them. There's no CO2 added. You just set them on the bar, not sideways like a British cask, but you set them straight up, and then you tap in a spigot on the side and then one in the top, and you pour it out. It should be served, preferably, within several hours it'll stay cool. But I have had some that last for several days, and they're fine. But these are all from very, very small breweries from the north of Bavaria. And this is the traditional. They're unfiltered, unpasteurized, and what you would get, you'd go down to your local pub and get a beer. This is what you're going
to
have.
So if Sam Smith doesn't want them to last for more than a week, why are we importing casks to this country at all? I mean, isn't it supposed to be like a fresh beer? And this is a question I have, because to me, when I think of cask, I think of a fresh beer. I think of a beer that I want to put on the bar and serve gravity style, and I want to move it. I don't want to put CO2 blanket on it. I don't want to try to preserve it. That's why I have draft beer. That's why I have bottled beer.
Well, we're lucky on the East Coast, where the travel time is a lot shorter. I personally don't know how much I'd want to have a European, whether it's British or German, cask in California because of travel times. But I think here we can get it a lot quicker. Some of the shipments, both from us and Be United, it's very small shipments that come over. We get them out to our distributors fairly quickly, and they turn them around and send them to the bars. So there's not a huge lag time between when they arrive, when they leave the brewery, to when they arrive in the bars and you drink them. We're actually going to be pouring 10 of these gravity kegs on Saturday at Spite and Dival. We'll have a bunch of them up. And there's a huge variety. There's a lot of subtle differences in them. They're all going to be fairly malty, but they just have such a range of character, especially since they are unpasteurized, unfiltered. So the yeast just gives them a lot more complexity than, say, a standard, what you consider a Pilsner.
And let's get Joe on.
I want to ask you a question. I'm just curious on this question, on this cask condition thing. The beers, they're all great beers, by the way. What is the... Does someone want to buy it again, or they just want to rotate it? I mean, is there a consumer that says, "Hey, I'm gonna gravitate to that beer"? Or this is can you build a business around it for the brand, not the concept of cask beer, but can you build a brand through cask? Can a brand be built on cask?
I think it's more of a supplement to it's like a seasonal beer. You wouldn't necessarily build your brand around your pumpkin beer in October. You wouldn't build it around your Christmas beer. But those are nice additions to your portfolio, and both cask or gravity, it's just something a little bit different. Especially if they're coming in, on a really limited basis. People want the next new thing, or they want something that they haven't had before. I as a consumer will go to a bar and be like, "Oh yeah, I've had this one, had that one. Ooh, that one I've never had."
Well, there's a huge audience for cask ales out there.
Oh, definitely.
I've been doing it since 1994, and
pioneer.
Yeah, and people have been loving it, and once again, I guess I was ranting before talking to the young Samuel Smith here. But cask beers were made to travel from England to India. That's what an IPA is. And I don't understand why there's this shyness or this apprehension or this desire not to send it over here. We're a lot closer than India.
I think I can give you the short version to that. If you've met Samuel's father, Humphrey, who this man is only about one thing.
Wait a minute. His father's name isn't Samuel.
It's Humphrey. And his father will do, if his father thought that 1 ounce of his beer was going to be not satisfying to somebody, it's not going to happen. This is how religious it is. This is why this brewery will be in existence 2,000, who knows how far they're going to be out. They will be last man standing in the independent British brewing business, by far.
Let Sonia say something.
Well, and Ray, I'm just speculating here, but I don't think you want to romanticize what the beers in India tasted like by the time they got from England.
Well, that's the second question. It's like, how good were they?
Yeah, exactly.
And we don't know the answer to that.
You know, I'm sure you could go back through some really arcane records and get the answer.
Some soldier in India that...
You know, we've seen some recipes that they haven't really been interpreted, you know, exactly to whatever volume or weight, but we've seen the list of ingredients that have been used in 19th century brewing, and they had a lot of them had to load up on the ingredients, load up on the hops, load up on molasses, other things, probably to mask, you know, off flavors or you know, bad water or whatever they were working with.
Well, yeah, they're trying to make it higher alcohol, right? So
yeah, I have a feeling that the beers we're drinking now, in general, are probably the best that have ever been out there.
Yeah, we have our IPA, yeah. And I'm fairly certain it's not traditional, and I'm perfectly okay by that.
What's that hop that you use in that IPA?
The Nelson Sauvin.
Oh my God,
it's lovely, isn't
it? It's so good.
Yeah, it's from New Zealand, and
right, Kiwi.
Yes, and the first time we brewed it, we bought out all of the remaining hops they had in New Zealand at the time, and everyone loved it, and we had to wait for the hop harvest to come through. No, there are no more. But no, it's delicious. It's a really nice sort of gooseberry flavor, as opposed to the grapefruit Columbus,
citrus, yeah.
Which is fabulous, and I love it. And
yeah.
Is in fact in there, but is not the aroma hops in our IPA.
No, it's a great
beer. But yeah, I mean, but that's what happens, right? I don't remember the first person to come out with Columbus hops in their IPA. Bridgeport's the first that kind of comes to mind for me.
I don't know.
But
Sierra, maybe.
No, Sierra does...
No, they're mostly Cascade.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. So Sierra came out with Cascade, and then everybody used Cascades. And then somebody came out with Columbus, and then everybody used Columbus. Right. And it's... I enjoy it, but it's the same way. I don't really want like a double IPA. I want my IPA to have a nice malt background to it. I want it to be chewy. I want it to be balanced. And that's what this is. So I have it if anybody wants some.
Can I have some?
Yeah.
Please?
Is this the IPA right here?
Yes.
I'm drinking the IPA. I want to ask another. I want to get Samuel Smith on again. So your family has been making beer a long time. What was it like 50 years ago? I'm sure you've heard from your father. I mean, were you more of a local brewery then? Has your market grown?
Well, we've always... definitely our market has grown. We've been selling beer in the United States since 1978. So, as Joe was saying, pretty much the first craft beer ever to be sold in the United States, pioneering stuff. And, you know, I suppose that's right. As transport has improved and sort of technology has improved so you can transport beer, our market probably has expanded. We started out... 250 years ago, just selling in the local town. Gradually, over the years, by brewing quality beers, by building up a reputation, and by employing the right people, we have. That's right. The market has expanded, and we sell more and more further afield.
What I know about the English, you know, brewing industry is that in the 70s there was the camera movement. There was the risk that many of the smaller breweries are going to be bought out by larger breweries.
Mm.
How did you guys survive?
Well, you know. You say the risk that many breweries were going to be bought out by large breweries, it happened. You know, there used to be probably 300 or 400 medium-sized family breweries like ours in the UK. Now they're probably 25, maybe something like that. They've absolutely been decimated over the years. And that's just through, essentially, people selling off their breweries, families not being interested in the business, not being passionate about brewing beer in their family heritage. And so they said, well, you know, this brewery's got a value, let's sell it off. That's not the way we do things at Sam Smith's. We are incredibly passionate about what we do, very proud of our heritage. And so, you know, our absolute key is independence, long-term independence. We're not remotely interested in the idea of being bought out. You know, the whole thing would fall apart. The Yorkshire Squares would go. The brewery would be closed. It would be a crime. It would be an absolute shocking thing to do. Sadly, that's happened all over the British industry. That's not what we're in the business of doing. We've been around for 250 years. Our brewery's been going for 250 years, and we, you know, have every intention of being around another 250 years if possible.
I just want to interrupt. One of the things I found fascinating about the English brewing system and the brewing culture is you talked about the value of a brewery. It's kind of defined by how many pubs it serves, because they have the tied house system in England. So a brewery will have, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, 200, 300 pubs that it services, or thousands. So, and that's what I observed over the years, watching exactly what you spoke of, watching, you know, this consolidation. And the breweries weren't being purchased because of the brewery. They're being purchased because of the pubs.
That's so, right. That's exactly right.
It's crazy.
Exactly. The breweries, in the British brewing system, breweries have existed by owning pubs, and then you have a guaranteed sort tied trade, exactly, in your pubs. And that system has been broken up to a large extent due to various government reforms in the 1980s. The free houses. But essentially what's happened, though, is it hasn't really got any better. All it means is that it's not breweries owning thousands of pubs, it's big pub
corporations
owning thousands of pubs. So the situation hasn't really got any better. But like you say, many breweries have sold off their breweries because they had a value in their pubs. And so they've essentially seen their brewery as a way of making money out of pubs. There is money to be had from owning pubs. But I suppose you could say one of the differences between us and many others is that we've all the time been intensely keen on brewing quality beer. And we've realised that independence that comes from being family operated, family owned for many generations, is what allows us to maintain Yorkshire Squares, to maintain Wooden Cask, all these things that make our beer unique and really give it the edge over our competitors.
Let me give you this is how fascinating this brewery is. His father made a decision. His father, to show you how traditional it is in a business format, his father made a decision a few years ago: take all the televisions out of the pubs, take all, no jukeboxes, nothing. We are here. These are pubs. Not only did he do that, he lowered the price of his beer. In this day and age, what was going on with these consolidation, all these breweries, you hit it right on the head, Ray. They all bought those breweries out for the pubs, the profitability. His father is a one-way street, as I call him. He goes up the one way, and he's coming right down the opposite way, and you're going to get hit in the head. It's so beautiful to see. He not only saw that, he says, you know what? I'm going to do all this stuff. I'm going to go back to more so to traditional pubbing, and I'm going to offer the best valued beer in England. And then you can go into the trendy London and go to his, like, Cheshire Cheese, which is one of the most famous pubs in London.
I've been there.
And you can't pay $2 for a pint of beer in Samuel Smith's pub. But you go next across the street and go to one of the pubs owned by the big breweries, you're paying $5. So this is unique, the whole system. So when you ask about kegs, and this man is, like I said, last man standing, last brewery standing. It will be.
Humphrey Smith.
Sam Smith.
I've been traveling with his son for a week, and let me tell you something. I think I'm talking to the father when I'm talking to him. He's 21 years old. I'm going, wow, we are in for some good times. I hope I'm around to see it.
Joe, you're a rock star. Joe Lieper from Merchant. Joe, what's the website for Merchant Devin?
MDVbeer.com.
MDVbeer.com. And Ray, anything special going on at DBA this week before
Let's
we close
see.
Out?
Well, we sell some of the best beers, whiskeys, and tequilas in the country. And every Sunday we have Saints football and great beer and great food from the Chop Chop.
Big article last week in Time Out New York the rising star New Orleans kitchens, and one of them's a DBA Williamsburg on Sundays, Chop Shop. And I'll give a shout-out again, Spite and Dival this Saturday. You want to try all these really great German gravity kegs, go over to Spite and Dival. Start at noon because they will run out. And I'd like to thank our sponsors there, Great Brew. goodbeerbrewers.com. Our supporters, goodbeerseal.com. You can also find Beer Sessions Radio on Facebook. Friend us, share beer thoughts, and talk about tonight's episode with other listeners. Thanks to my co-host, Ray Dieter, and our guests tonight, Beer Arroyo, Audrey St. Legere, Sonia Jacoby, Joe Leeper from Merchant of Venn, and Samuel Smith, VII the 7th, from Sam Smith Brewery. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Bree Connor, and the engineer tonight is Dan Brindley. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.